Rogers on 10 Sports.
What's up, folks? Welcome in to another wonderful edition of Money Moves. A very happy New Year's to every single one of you watching right now across the world, I assume, as we're getting ready for 2026. And what a day to get ready. Sports across the tube. Got to go behind in the glass area and tell our folks, hey, man, producers, APs, I need games all over the place, including an NBA contest, which we're sweating out already. Got the Charlotte Hornets along with Zach Cohen, who, by the way, will be with us a little bit later. Talk about that momentarily. In this contest against the Golden State Warriors. Odd clash of uniforms, by the way, because the Charlotte Hornets are wearing what kind of comes across as like a gold color, despite the fact that they're playing the Golden State Warriors. We do have a lot to get to, but before we get to our rundown and what we have in store, we have a game that is set to kick off in mere moments, as we have Arizona State and Duke set to go at it in the Sun Bowl. Duke, a little late move here. In fact, here at Circa, I got the 3.5, now up to 4 with a total of 49.5. That's going to be your closing number in favor of the Blue Devils. And that 49.5, pretty much static in terms of where it opened. Saw some spots, 49.5, get down to as low as 47.5. We're back up to that 49.5-point mark. We have Iowa and Vanderbilt going at it right now. Iowa up by 14-3 in the third quarter right now. Hawkeyes went off as about a 3.5-point dog. This is one as well where you saw some of the line movement. Market pushed back on it a little bit. Open 3.5. Got to as high as 5.5 before we closed back where we were before this game started at 3.5. We'll keep an eye on those games as well. But it is a usual edition of Money Moves, so let's get started like we usually do.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is The Rundown.
A lot of smart folks joining us here in this first hour and here across the program. Guests galore, as some would say. Stormy Bonatoni is going to check in yet again as she is out getting ready for a very good matchup between Texas Tech and Oregon. Looking forward to that. Getting some more details. We talked to Stormy yesterday. She got to talk to coaches yesterday, so we'll get a little bit of new news as to maybe what some of these coaches are thinking and a little bit more on these wide receivers versus Texas Tech. And I will say this. The more I've looked at this matchup, the more I've not only understood why the line move is heading in the direction that it is, but I kind of jumping on that side. We'll discuss as well as some other college football playoff previews, but we also have another great guest with us. In fact, many. Kendall Valenzuela, get us a look at some player prop perspectives for Week 18 in the National Football League and maybe some waiver wires if you're still going in fantasy. Tim Murray, speaking of bowls, will join us from the Las Vegas Bowl. Saw some Nebraska jerseys and lots of folks getting ready for what's going to transpire out here. And of course, as I mentioned, Cohen, Hardwood Handicappers podcast host, as we look ahead to a full slate of NBA action, which is already underway. We also, of course, as we look ahead to the rest of the day, have more on college football. It's not just the bowl games that are underway right now, not just the ones that will happen a little bit later, but of course, the college football playoffs begin yet again tonight. We'll have a ton on what we're going to see this evening between Miami and Ohio State. Not only from our analysts, but of course myself is going to full preview that coming up in just a couple of minutes. And last but certainly not least, Happy New Year's. Of course, we have a good slate for you here today, both on the court, on the grass, wherever you want to talk about. We'll have it all for you on Money Moves. But I think it's hard not to begin on the main stage tonight. College football playoffs begin. Miami takes on Ohio State. Original number at the open, 9.5 in favor of Ohio State with a total of 42.5. Line move for this, the really notable thing here at this point, is a total. We're down to 40.5 between Miami and Ohio State. Where do you begin in a game like this? And the first thing that I came up with when looking at how we're going to evaluate this is, first and foremost, how does the pass protection look for Ohio State? I think that this kind of all, it's one of those things where, from a preview standpoint, the matchups and the X's and O's, how does a game transpire? What comes of it? Pass protection combined with the ability to run the ball, I think, is going to be very key in a game like this. But pass protection in general, I think, is going to be very important because the time in which Ohio State looked its most mortal, the time in which it lost its lone contest, that, of course, the Big Ten championship game against Indiana, and Indiana's pass rush was a big reason why. 12 of 34 dropbacks for Julian Sain. He was considered under pressure. He got sacked 5 times against Texas. If you go back to the beginning of the year, it's the beginning of the year, but still a game played, and the data point nonetheless, 5 of 20 dropbacks under pressure. No sacks allowed, but Sain's been under pressure on just 24.9% of his dropbacks so far this year. Being under pressure consistently is not something that the young quarterback has had to deal with, and yet The one time he faced it consistently, his offense looked a little disjointed, and of course, they failed to win that game for the season. Julian Sain under pressure, 61.5% completion, 7 touchdowns to 2 interceptions, a turnover-worthy play rate of just 1.9%. So still, even when he is under duress, Sain does a great job with it. But one would assume that you're going to be under pressure here today. Miami has some elite pass rushers, as we know. Reuben Bain Jr., 66 pressures on the season, 10 sacks, a pass rush win rate of 22.9%. Akeem Ezidor as well, 55 pressures, 9 sacks himself, 21.2% pass rush win rate for him. The way you negate a pass rush, there's a lot of different ways. You have a good pass pro in front of you, that would really help. I also think you run the ball, and that's going to be a really interesting matchup here because Ohio State has been, for a team of its ilk, a national title contender, a favorite, an elite team throughout the course of the year, highest power rated team in the country. They've been a pretty average group in terms of running the ball. 79th in expected points added per rush for the Buckeyes. 60th in terms of rush success rate at 41.4%. They're inside the 25th percentile in explosive rush rate themselves. So they don't really generate a ton of explosive runs. They're not a bad running offense by any stretch. They'll get you 3 or 4 yards, and maybe that's enough for the way that you run your offense. But they're not a dominant ground game by any stretch. And if you're going to become one-dimensional, well, then that's going to allow Miami to pin their ears back and get after Sain and do much of what Indiana did in the Big Ten championship game. The question becomes, can Miami stop the run? Are they average enough defensively that they're going to allow Ohio State's floor to be raised as a rushing offense? Miami, similar to Ohio State, not a poor run defense, also not an elite run defense. 77th in expected points added allowed per rush by opponents against the Hurricanes. 39th in run success rate allowed, which is good. However, Miami has had an issue at times in allowing explosive runs this season. They are inside the 25th percentile themselves in explosive rush rate allowed. So all of these things for Ohio State's offense, it stems from running the ball. It stems from protecting Julian Sain. And will you be able to do that here against Miami? And as you extend that out here for Ohio State, this is a big physical secondary that Miami can boast here in a matchup like this. And yet on the other side, you get these wide receivers who are absolutely incredible. Jeremiah Smith, Carnell Tate, even Max Claret, tight end, has been very, very good. And this matchup, I think, is really going to be mainly what dictates whether or not Ohio State can cover this number. We can talk about their defense, which we will momentarily, but if this offense is going to be as constipated as it was when it took on Indiana, well, then I think the Buckeyes are going to find themselves in a little bit more of a dogfight, and I think they can, considering we should give a little bit more respect to Miami's defense and their pass rush. But you flip this on its head, and the question becomes, what does Miami's offense look like? And you almost have to draw a line through last week or last time out against Texas A&M. We know how bad the weather was. Carson Beck, though, throughout the course of this season, has not exactly been a guy that has challenged secondaries downfield. 8.5 yards per attempt is fine on the season, but an average depth of target of 7.3 yards downfield. One of the issues in which Carson Beck has struggled this year, it has been the deep passes. Passes of 20 or more yards downfield for Carson Beck, just 13% of his attempts, but he's completed 51% of those. He's thrown 12 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. He's got a turnover-worthy play rate of 9.6% whenever he throws a ball 20 or more yards downfield. That really is going to be where this is, I think, one for Miami, or at least the ability to stay inside of this number and potentially pull off the upset. Beck has been good. I don't think he's been elite. He's had a great job of getting pass protection that has helped them upright. But at times, he can put the ball in danger, especially when he tries to challenge opposing secondaries. And this is a good defensive back group that can cover these guys. And that also calls into question, what do you do with some of the weapons that you have? I think one of the big ones, obviously, is going to be Malachi Toney and how they end up using him. Toney's been very good for Miami. I believe set the record for a freshman in terms of total receptions in an ACC season. 7-plus receptions at plus 109 for Toney today. 63-plus receiving yards at minus 116. And the flip side of it is, do you have balance if you're Miami? Can you run the ball? It's going to be one of the big things here. Ohio State has been an elite run defense. Third in opponent expected points added per rush. 2.8 yards per attempt allowed. Third best in the country heading into this game. 83.7 rush yards allowed for Ohio State. That's fifth best in the country. Also fifth best in opponent rush success rate as well. And at about the 90th percentile in explosive rush rate allowed at this point. They don't give up big plays, generally down to down. They have defended the run very well. And while Miami statistically, much like we're talking about here, has been really below average with their running attack, 105th in expected points added per rush so far this season, 4.1 yards per attempt, 80th in the country, only 146.8 rush yards, 72nd in the country. Again, you're floating around average when you're talking about some of these numbers, and they don't generate explosives. But you're coming off of a game against Texas A&M in which you ran the ball relatively well. 28 carries, 175 yards. Mark Fletcher had 17 of those carries for 172, 10.1 yards per attempt. You're not really able to generate big plays throughout the year. You take on the Texas A&M defense that when you dig into some of the minutiae of their statistics, you talk about a defense that at times has struggled against the run, giving up some explosive plays. So how much do we take away from a strong rushing performance against an average run defense? At the end of the day, looks like 9.5 to me is a little too much. We'll see if we can get to 10 by the time we get to kickoff later today, and we'll ask our other folks about this throughout the day. But Miami defensively, I think, deserves more credit. They're an elite pass rushing team. They're a good defense on the back end, who I think have the size to match up with some of the guys at wide receiver for Ohio State. I think Ohio State, going out on a limb here, is a 9.5-point favorite. It's plenty to win the game, but we're talking about where this number should be at. I think we're probably talking about more about where the line is for Georgia and Ole Miss, 6.5 to 7, as opposed to 9.5 in favor of Ohio State against the Miami Hurricanes. But we'll have more on this as we look around the country. We're going to talk to a lot of people about what their thoughts are on the college football playoffs starting today. Coming up next, we're going to have Stormy Bonantoni with us. We'll get her thoughts on what she's learned after talking to coaches for Texas Tech and Oregon. Get a little bit more on what I understand has been a trip from hell. So don't go anywhere. Stormy joins us next here at Bunny Moose. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. VSiN Pro gives you access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
When you wake up tomorrow morning and you're a little hungover, you got a really big pounding headache, generally that's the same thing I feel every time I come into studio. And you'll deal with the same thing I come into studio because you'll see Stormy Bonantoni on your screens tomorrow morning. As Oregon and Texas Tech will go at it, we welcome in via the Progressive Guest Line. Oh, look at that. She's here. I hope she didn't hear the intro. Stormy, let's talk. Let's not waste any more time. We're still sitting at 2.5. You know I kid. I like to bust your chops. 2.5 with a total of 51.5. Let's start. You got to talk to some of the coaches yesterday. Anything big coming out of your coach sit down with either side at this point?
Such a positive welcome. I'm so glad that, you know, every day you come into the studio, you're just so excited to see me. One of the many items that we discussed yesterday on the call was the impact of Baron Morton's health for Texas Tech. And this is something I know I talked to you guys about this already yesterday after my conversation with Baron and just how much better he's feeling. But after hearing to their offensive coordinator, hearing their offensive coordinator, Mac Lefwich, and hearing Joey McGuire talk about it, this feels like it could be maybe a not so secret weapon for him extending what Texas Tech can do offensively with the mobility that he's going to be able to offer. And it's not like anything crazy, right? He's never been a mobile quarterback. He's not going to give you, as Leftwich put it, any Taysom Hill vibes. But for a guy who has been playing with a hairline fracture in his lower right leg for almost the entirety of the season and just re-aggravated it, and it got worse at the midpoint that cost him 2 games, he has really been gutting out a lot of pain for most of the season. I didn't realize how much he had been in the boot throughout the course of the year. He would practice in a walking boot every single day and then take it off to play the game Saturday and put it right back on after the game. So the fact that he is completely out of the boot, he feels as good as he has ever felt, and that's going to offer them some opportunity offensively to whether it be extend plays a little bit, give him a little bit more time to get the ball out to his playmakers, maybe even run for a first down if you need it. That's just, it's a different element to the Texas Tech offense that they haven't really had this season that could be a difference maker for him.
So building on that, one of the things that has really stuck out to me in diving a little bit more into Texas Tech on offense is their reliance on some of these explosive plays. If you look at some of the numbers on their non-explosive expected points added per play, they're like in the 25th percentile in the country. So down to down, they've been kind of hit or miss. They just really rely on some of those explosives. Do you think that down to down stuff gets better with a healthier Morton?
I think it will, and I think that'll be most important for them in the red zone because most people that are betting Texas Tech, if you had a concern, it would probably be what that looks like for them in the red zone because there have been a lot of games this season where because they've been so explosive, to your point, they haven't had a lot of red zone opportunities, and then when they did have some of those bigger stage national games against good defenses, and I look specifically at the two games against BYU and the early season matchup against Utah – you get inside the 20 and something changes with the efficiency and you're settling for field goals or missing field goals. I think the two meetings against BYU, there were 11 field goal attempts and a couple misses just because of the way that they kind of struggled, whether it be down to down or inside the 20. And that's something that Leftwich talked a lot about, like really dialing in their first down plays in the red zone, getting easy completions or runs that can put you in a good situation on second down, because they had just been putting themselves in so many third and long situations. And another element of that Leftwich said would be important for them is being a little bit more personnel-minded, perhaps over scheme-minded, and thinking about some of the pieces they want to get involved in those moments, like a Terrence Carter or Jacoby Williams or Caleb Douglas, whatever it is.
I think you can argue that you're going to, when you're on the sideline tomorrow, watch two of the better pass rushes in the country. In fact, maybe the two best pass rushes in the country. So did you talk to anybody about how both teams are going to handle the intense pass rush that will face the other?
Yeah, and what was actually an interesting thing that came out of the conversations and comparing, we had Texas Tech first and then comparing that discussion with the Oregon coaching staff after that, is how similar a lot of the conversations were, especially when it came to both defensive lines and trying to test their depth. Like Will Stein, Oregon's offensive coordinator, made a point to say how much he loves that Texas Tech's D-line is getting all of this hype because how much he likes his guys. And why wouldn't you? Because you have Dante Moore and wide receivers that are getting healthier and this three-headed monster in the running back room behind a Joe Moore finalist offensive line. They're number two in the country in yards per carry. And I really got the sense that they want to try to run the ball right at these guys, like set the tone and tempo that they are going to hold up. Conversely, Texas Tech probably has the best front four in all of college football, like each of those four guys, but they don't rotate them a lot. So can they get worn down by the tempo of those running backs, having that combination of Noah Whittington, Deer Hill, Jordan Davison, and they can all keep each other fresh. And then on the other side, Texas Tech was kind of talking the same way about Oregon's D-line. Obviously, you've got a Bear Alexander, and that front is so stout, you can't let those D-tackles wreck the game if you're Texas Tech. So can you wear them down a bit with tempo? Texas Tech likes to play fast. Can they get the ball out quick? Can they test their depth a little bit? So it was kind of fun on both sides saying how good they think their starters are on both sides of the ball, but potentially the ability to wear them down and see what those guys behind them might have to do.
Stormy Bonantoni with us, usually in this chair. A good week to not be here, by the way, because I think both Kelly and Gil have like the super mega flu. So this studio's feeling a little murky at this point right now.
Did I give it to them potentially?
I mean, if you gave it to them, it got magnified by like 20 somehow, because those two dudes, there's something going on at this point right now. All right, let's talk about preparation before we get to some of the games, the game tonight and maybe going forward. You were on the sideline for the Rose Bowl last year. You saw Oregon go down in a spectacular fashion, getting blown out. All of the teams that had the byes lost in that round. So what'd you talk to Dan Lanning about maybe playing now as opposed to sitting back and waiting for so long? Is there a difference? Did he mention it? And did you tell him that you were on the sideline? Does he know you're over, that he is over when you're on the sideline for a playoff game?
I didn't bring it up. I thought it would be better for me just to stay away from that conversation altogether. He doesn't remember. I don't remember, you know?
That's right.
But you said it, right? The teams who had the byes last year all lost in the quarterfinal round. And granted, like, we know that the teams that had those byes were also not the top four teams like they are this time around. But that being said, yeah, Dan Lanning in particular and his staff, Tosh Lupoi, their defensive coordinator, repeatedly said how happy they were to get the 5 seed so that they could play that first round game. And so that they could feel like they were coming into the quarterfinals and semifinals, like, in a rhythm, if they get to the semifinal, that is. And part of their prep last week, like I told you the other day, was that they did a full mock game, right, leading up to even the first round game, just so that they could feel like they were still in their routine. And it's interesting how much Dan Lanning prioritizes routine and doing the same stuff that they have done week in and week out every single year. And I think they do feel like there is a little bit of a leg up for them that they were able to have that performance and they were able to find some stuff in the second half that they didn't like about their game that they could harp on and that they could correct. Meanwhile, the rest versus rust thing is going to be interesting for Texas Tech too, because they've had this huge layoff. It's like 25 days since they've been able to play a football game. And Joey McGuire is, you know, he reached out to Sonny Dykes and some other coaches who have been in this position to ask them what they did. And he said that he just keeps telling his players, can you guys make me right? You know, make me right that the prep that we did going into this thing is enough. So it'll be a really interesting dynamic to see if that does have any impact.
All right, let's move on to the game tonight. I fully admit, I opened the show with this, I think I have changed sides. I've looked a lot more into this matchup, and I completely understand why the market went in Oregon's direction and what we're going to see. Miami and Ohio State. I'm kind of in on Miami staying inside of this number at 9.5. Where have you been at with this? The total's down to 40.5. What's your expectation for the Cotton Bowl tonight?
Yeah, I felt like since this line first popped and we were in that 9.5 to 10 range, like I have felt pretty consistently like it was too many points, but it hasn't come back down. And I get that Ohio State's been really dominant against most of the teams they've faced this season. But to your point, like Miami's pretty darn good. And there was a time before they Mario Cristobal'd us that we were talking about them as the best team in the country. And I like that they have been in playoff mode since essentially early November. The cause for concern, I would assume, is for this offense, right? Anybody that's betting them is like, okay, well, after what we saw last week, I don't know how I feel about it. Carson Beck barely threw for 100 yards. But that game was so wind impacted. They and A&M and the kicking game also significantly impacted by wind that's not going to be the case here. So if you're betting Miami, you have to believe Beck is going to hit the throws he needs to. He's going to take care of the ball in a low total game. Giving me anything more than a touchdown on Miami was something that I was going to like. And you mentioned the total. This has come down too, but I'm in complete agreement with that movement. Both of these defenses are so good. And while Julian Sain is on pace to be the most accurate passer for a single season in college football history, last time I saw him play a good defense, it was a tough day. Indiana got to him, sacked 5 times in the Big Ten championship. Miami's got a great pass rush. Fourth in the country in sacks, they're going to create problems for him. So the lean is Miami and under, but obviously shop around for the best number that you can get on that total.
We don't have time for this in its totality, but you did ask the question in our notes here, who ruins the Ohio State, Indiana, Georgia moneyline parlay? What if I were to say both Indiana and Georgia?
Oh, no. That's not good for our Georgia to win the championship bets.
No, but I was telling Adam Burke yesterday, I think there's a reason why this thing's not. Everybody keeps telling me it's going to be easy, and yet it's still sitting at 6, 6.5 and won't really budge. Stormy, we appreciate it. Won't talk to you until after it. Have a good call, all right?
Thank you. Appreciate it. See ya.
See ya. Stormy Bonatoni again, usual host here. Show's a lot better when she's here. We'll come back. Kendall Valenzuela will join us to get a look at some player props for this week in the NFL.
Watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now is the best time of year for bettors in the all-new Boomer Sportsbook, bringing you the action. Football, hockey, basketball, and more. Use code VSIN250 when you sign up for a Boomer's mobile account. They'll match your first deposit up to $250 in bonus bets. Plus, get -105 on all pro football spreads every regular season game. Download the Boomer Sportsbook app today. Learn more at betwithboomer.com. Got to be 21. Terms and conditions apply. Please bet responsibly. Got a little bit of a shootout going on down right now in the, I think it's the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, 7-0 with 8:37 left to go, and Arizona State has a second down coming up. That is relevant as Arizona State alum and, of course, SiriusXM host, fantasy life expert, and friend of the show, Kendall Valenzuela, joins us adorned in Arizona State attire. So this does matter to you, huh?
Yeah. Had to do it. We couldn't say no. If it was, I told you before we got on here, if it was anywhere else, I was going to try and go. Nothing will top the Peach Bowl that I went to just a few months ago. So yeah, we're loving it. How's it going?
It's good, but I don't think it's going as well for me as it is for you. I was perusing Twitter and I see that you have won a stacked fantasy league. What is this? You won a fantasy title? Congratulations.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's all we do, JVT. That's all we do for fantasy football is win titles. But this one was extra special. First year of the league for this stacked, and it was definitely stacked. If you guys want to go check it out, it was written about on Reddit the whole season. We had so much fun, just a ton of great, great guys in that league, but had to take them down this year. So it was so fun. $5,000 going to the American Diabetes Association, the charity that I picked. And then I get a nice new helmet to put on in the background here. So, I'm excited, but thanks for the shout out. It was a great year.
Yep. Dig it. Always good to win titles. You know, now the disbanded Bets Giving here at VSIN. I won the last one. I still have the belt at my house, but nobody seems. It's always funny.
There we go.
I won a fantasy league with all the homies one year. All of a sudden, that was the last year. I win Bets Giving. All of a sudden, that's the last year. So I don't know what that is. But all right, let's talk a little fantasy. So what? Yeah. First off, let's start generally. What is Fantasy Week 18? I know we have DFS, but are there psychopaths that are actually still involved in some leagues going into a Week 18 in the NFL?
There are psychopaths who we know and love. Some people like to go Week 18. I know in all of my leagues I don't, because we just don't know the stakes that are going to be happening in Week 18. A lot of teams rest their players, and maybe some people like to have that kind of sicko mindset. So there are some people still starting, or they do a fantasy championship that is 3 or 4 weeks long. You do the most, the total points, whatever it is. So I think, you know, my list was short at fantasylife.com. You guys can go and check out all of our articles there. But I kept recommending Tyler Shuck, who I know, Jonathan, we've been talking about for weeks now. But if you need a quarterback streamer at all, he's been averaging, 17 fantasy points week in and week out. He's been good over there. Parker Washington, I still think for the Jacksonville Jaguars, a little bit of something to play for there, obviously. I think he's still going to be involved there. And if you want real sicko starts, like Isaac Tesla for the Lions is someone that I think you can look at too. And maybe one Chigakonkwo. We've seen Cam Ward step up just a little bit in these last few weeks. So I think that Chigakonkwo, he's only 17% rostered, but if you need a tight end streamer, he could be one that you go and look at as well.
Yeah, I would assume too, from a DFS standpoint, obviously it's a little bit more difficult to win just because of all the moving pieces. I would also assume in DFS, you have a lot of the same names that are probably getting snapped up. Are you not?
Yeah, you have, it's like you have a lot of the big names, right? So you have to, in DFS, people know this, but, Peter Overzet, who I did a show with a couple years ago on SiriusXM, he would always tell myself and the listeners, when you're building your DFS lineups, you want to be able to tell a story, and you have to make it a little bit more different, because if you play all the chalk plays, sometimes it works, but a lot of people are going to be making those same moves. So you do have a lot of guys that are going to get, snatched up a little bit. Like, I love Chris Olave this week, and I know he's not necessarily inexpensive. Like, he is one of those guys that I just look at and I say, okay, I think it was 8,300 on FanDuel, 7,200 or something on DraftKings, but you're picking him up for a reason. Why? We just talked about Tyler Shuck, so I still really like him. But then you have to go down the list. Like, Wandell Robinson is someone that I've been looking at in the DFS lineups this week. Even gross teams, like, I know that the Raiders are not trying to win games, but Michael Mayer over there at 5,200, 3,500 for DraftKings was also another guy that I just said, you know what, he's going to get the targets. Even if they don't want to win, he's going to be involved. So you want to just make it a little as different as you can without, trying to galaxy brain it too much.
Kendall Valenzuela with us again, Fantasy Life, where you can find the work. All right, so we, of course, have a lot of betting opportunities for us, player props and more. I wanted to ask you some in the vein of fantasy and what some of the performances are going to be, and obviously in the games that I think do matter, at least we can get a read on how this is going to go. So I think I asked you this in some sense when we talked on Monday on your show, but what is your expectation for your offense and for audience, yours being Kendall's Seattle Seahawks? But this 49ers defense has been really bad. Are we finally going to get this offense to wake up for the first time since that Thursday night game in the second half against the Rams?
I hope so. I really hope so. I'm playing everyone that I can in this matchup. Like, it should have been the Sunday game. I know we talked about that on my show on Monday or Tuesday with you, but I'm playing everyone in this game. And when I say everyone, like, I've recommended AJ Barner as a streamer. He caught a touchdown last week. And he was someone that I think they're going to utilize. And I think the big question for this game is what Sam Darnold looks like. I can say that we know he's going to be going to JSN often and early. And we know this 49ers defense. The one good thing here is that they just do not have a pass rush. They do not get pressure on the quarterback. So that's a really good sign for Sam Darnold, because once he gets that pressure, sometimes he falls inward on himself. I know he had two pretty bad turnovers last week, and we can talk about the ref situation, whatever you want, but it was still two turnovers. So you need a clean game regardless, because I think the 49ers are definitely going to be one that if they are able to get turnovers, that they are going to take advantage of that. But for Sam Darnold, I'm actually highly optimistic about him. I think that the Thursday game 2 weeks ago is the game that he needed to overcome two really bad turnovers and still continue to fight and put up a win. So I know a lot of people are saying the lights are going to be too bright and that he's going to totally crumble, but I like all of these plays to be honest in this game, because I think the over is going to hit, and I just think it's going to be a back and forth shootout. Even with the Seahawks defense, like, we saw them let up a little bit against the Rams rushing attack as well. So yeah, I think CMC is still going to get his, but I'm expecting a great game. And I think JSN is the path through that. And then for, you know, some other pieces, I really do think AJ Barner is another one that they're going to look at getting involved.
You know, I'm curious, because you do have the fantasy perspective here. You're also a Seahawks fan. I'd like you to put that aside really quickly. Using what you know about all of these guys and their performances, who do you think has been the best offensive player in the NFL this year?
Oh, I think it's Jaxon Smith-Njigba. And that's... My bias aside, but I do really think that JSN has been someone that's been amazing, and I always look at things from a fantasy perspective, so I'm very biased on him. I think Puka Nacua as well has obviously been amazing, CMC as well. I think just like this whole division has been fun to watch all year, and it's crazy that we're going to be like having to watch the Panthers and Buccaneers fight for a playoff spot when I think two or three of these teams should, you know, be able to just continue on and not have to look at them. So I do think it's been JSN, but like you said, I'm a little bit biased.
The answer we were looking for is Bijan Robinson, but we will take Jaxon Smith-Njigba as well. All right, let's talk a little bit about my guys, the Indianapolis Colts. You know, I'm curious. We always talk about it from a player prop standpoint, especially for these quarterbacks. Negative game script, you're going to be throwing it a little bit more. One's going to assume that the Colts will find themselves behind here. What does that mean for Riley Leonard, and what does that mean for some of these skill position guys now that not only it's Leonard, but it's the Texans defense they're facing?
Yeah, I'm honestly going back to Tyler Warren. I think that Tyler Warren's going to be the guy that kind of gets just enough, right? This isn't one where we're saying stream Riley Leonard. We don't think he's going to go out and just absolutely dominate the Houston Texans defense. But I do think that when these new quarterbacks come in and when we have to look at, you know, what direction they're going to go, we know that the tight ends kind of sometimes become that security blanket. So I think when we're looking at Riley Leonard, and more specifically Tyler Warren, who the year didn't end up being as good as we wanted it to, that he'll end up getting those short passes if he needs to. I'm still looking at Alec Pierce. For some reason, he still interests me a little bit in this game, even though, like I said, Houston Texans defense, I don't think they're going to necessarily give up. But I am looking at those two. But more specifically, I do think Tyler Warren gets a pretty good line in this one.
All right, one more for you before we get you out of here again. Kendall Valenzuela, Fantasy Life is where you want to go find all the work. DK Metcalf, we saw the absence, I thought, really did affect the Steelers. Did we take anything from that matchup? Was there somebody who ate some targets? Washington obviously hurt now as well. So where do we go with the skill positions for the Steelers?
You go, I think you go nowhere, to be totally honest with you. Like, it's just, I'm looking at this game, and to be totally honest, my whole mindset in this matchup is that the Ravens, I want to be on the side of the Ravens, because I think that's where this game is ultimately going to end up. DK Metcalf not being out there, obviously we saw it hurt a lot, and I just don't know if I want to go anywhere else. Like, Kenneth Gainwell and the running backs, I think, are always interesting. I think Kenneth Gainwell, when we look at just his receiving props as well, and just his targets that he's gotten, I think that they're going to get back into that. Although last week it just did not look good. Like, they were fantasy managers' nightmares going up against that Browns team. So I think the biggest takeaway here is that if you can avoid, I think I would, but if not, I'm really still going to the running backs. Maybe a little Pat Freiermuth if you want to go that direction. But receiver wise, I didn't like Scotty Miller. I don't like MVS. I don't like, it's just one where I think we're going to see, you know, the Ravens come in and do business.
Kendall, as always, it has been great. It's been a fun football season. I think we'll keep our relationship together for the postseason as well. But Happy New Year, my friend.
You too. Thank you.
Kendall Valenzuela, again, Fantasy Life, where you can find everything. Take a break. When we come back, let's check in the Las Vegas Bowl. Tim Murray and get his thoughts on tonight and the rest of our college football playoff matchups when we return.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
19-5 run for the Charlotte Hornets. They're back out on top over the Golden State Warriors, 89-88. Our lone NBA game of the morning window. We will have a couple of games tipping off in about 20 minutes from now. We'll get to those in a little bit. But let's head out to a little bit further south from here. I had to think about that cardinal direction for a second. Tim Murray out on the sidelines at Allegiant Stadium as he gets ready for the Las Vegas Bowl. We're going to see a pretty good one. Nebraska taking on Utah. Utes a 14.5-point favorite, total of 51.5. Timothy, you'll be working the sidelines, so give us the sit rep. What's the expectation for your bowl game today?
Yeah, I mean, the big question, obviously, is Morgan Scalley taking over on a full-time role. We expected him to be the head coach JVC in the fall. Well, Kyle Whittingham had other options as he headed to Michigan. So Morgan Scalley, the era of under him, the former Utah safety, begins now. And then on the flip side, JVT, for Nebraska, a lot of pieces will be gone. Emmett Johnson, their starting running back, will be out of this game, and their best offensive lineman, Rocco Spindler. So Nebraska's a team, obviously, in year number three of Matt Rule. They have increased their win total each and every year throughout the Rule process, but this is going to be a pretty shorthanded bunch here for Nebraska. Utah, on the flip side, you know, got Devin Dampier that we really like preseason. I just am curious how this Nebraska front is going to slow down the second most prolific rushing attack in college football this year. So that's the thing for me when I look at this one. Nebraska, how do they have success offensively? TJ Lateef, though, good news here. He was dealing with a hamstring injury from the regular season finale. He should be a full go for the Cornhuskers.
All right, Tim might appreciate this, but Iowa punches it in 30-17 now with about, 13 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. Tim Murray with us again, working the sideline for the Las Vegas Bowl. How's the crowd? I mean, it's Nebraska, it's Utah, but it's Las Vegas, and it's the middle of the day. What do you think the turnout's like out there?
You know, there is an expectation. I was talking to a beat reporter for Nebraska that about 20 to 25,000 Nebraska fans should be in attendance today. Obviously, it's a passionate fan base. They snapped their bowl, streak of missing out on bowls last year going to the Pinstripe Bowl. But the hope is, JBT, that this breaks the record for most attended Vegas Bowl, which is around 44,000 is the record. I believe that was a BYU game at the old Sam Boyd Stadium. So of the bowl games that I've covered here at Allegiant Stadium, I fully anticipate this to be the best crowd that we've seen inside Allegiant Stadium. I think it'll be about 45,000, which, you know, for, as you mentioned, a mid-afternoon bowl game on New Year's Eve, I think it should be a pretty good showing. Utah, obviously, has been here plenty of times. This is the most well-attended team at the Vegas Bowl. Utah, this will be their seventh appearance all time in the Vegas Bowl.
I believe I was on the sideline for that one, potentially, by the way. BYU-Utah was the lone Las Vegas Bowl I did radio sidelines for many, many years ago. So, yeah, it was a pretty good one. It was kind of a fake comeback. I don't remember who did it. But either way, Tim Murray's with us. All right, Tim, we got to pick your brain. I know you're busy, but we do have a playoff game today. And Ohio State laying 9.5 against Miami with a total that is now down to 40.5. What are your expectations tonight?
Utah players coming out now, so they're getting pretty fired up. I think this is a really challenging game for Miami to get going offensively. I know we all are waiting for that 10 to show up, JBT. I will take the 10. I took a little 10 on Sunday with the Canes, but for me, I played first half under in this game. I think this is going to be a challenge for Miami to get things going offensively, but on the flip side, JBT, I think you can make a strong argument that this might be the best defense that Ohio State has gone up against this year. When you think about what Miami brings to the table, Reuben Bain, Mesidor on both edges there for Miami. You saw Keontae Scott, his return was massive for Miami in that win over Texas A&M. So I think we've got a low scoring first half. I took under 20.5, JBT, in the first half of this game. And I think it's just a real challenge early on for both of these teams to get things going. And if I'm Miami, I'm trying to play a little bit of keep away. So do we keep the ball in the hands of Mark Fletcher as much as possible? So for me, JBT, the best bet that I made on this game, first half under Miami, Ohio State, under 20.5.
All right, what about the three tomorrow? Anything really stick out to you at the top of your list for our three playoff games?
You know, I laid it with Georgia, JVT. You know me, I don't love the late points all that much, but I just think this is a unique spot, right? You think about what Pete Golding was able to do, getting the job, all that emotion. They dominate Tulane as they should have, 41-10. And now you got to turn things around and you got to prepare for Georgia. And let's be honest about Georgia. You can make a strong argument. This is the best football team in college football right now, the way that they've played. You know, that Texas game in the middle of November, the second half was absolute dominant by this Georgia team, especially defensively. And then you look at the SEC championship. And also, I think it's worth noting, JVT, a year ago, Georgia was in the same situation, right? They won the SEC, played in the Sugar Bowl, and they lost that game to Notre Dame. And I think Kirby Smart is going to remind this team of that. Gunnar Stockton is playing at a strong level right now. Colby Young is expected back for Georgia. Zachariah Branch has been an absolute difference maker for this Georgia team. So I really like the way the defense is playing. You think back to the game they played in the middle of October, JVT, Georgia, first eight possessions all led to scores. So I don't know how Ole Miss keeps pace. And I do think going from the Tulane game to Georgia, you've got game number two for Pete Golding. And this is game 138 for Kirby Smart as a head coach. I'll give the edge to Kirby Smart. I'm a bit surprised this number hasn't really moved in that direction. So that's always a bit worrisome, just kind of hanging out there at 6.5. But I laid the chalk with Georgia here against Ole Miss.
All right, dude, I know it's a busy day for you. We'll let you go. Thanks for making some time before your call. Have a good call, okay?
All right. See you, JBT.
Tim Murray. Follow him on Twitter at @1TimMurray. Check him out on the sidelines there for that Utah matchup with Nebraska in the Las Vegas Bowl. All right, couple of score updates for you before we get to our second hour. We can expand on some of the stuff that we're going to see here from a line move standpoint in college football. But a couple of things. First off, Arizona State and Duke. We do have a pretty back-and-forth affair between these two programs right now. 14-all with 5:05 left to go in the first. A five-play, 75-yard drive for Arizona State. This has been back and forth, but Moss with a 44-yard touchdown reception that is going to get Arizona State into the end zone and get this thing done. So Jalen Moss for the day, two receptions, 95 yards, and a touchdown that has tied this game up at 41 apiece. Current line in game for this matchup between these two, according to DraftKings right now, in-game number as it sits, probably at about, 3.5 in favor of Duke with a total of 72.5. That's what I was looking for. $1.60 is what you're laying on the money line. And let's go to Iowa and Vandy. I mentioned to Tim, who gave us a fist pump. I think I know what side he's on here. Iowa right now up 31-17 over Vandy with 13:30 left to go in the fourth quarter. Six plays, 70 yards for Iowa that puts them up by this score. Vandy had kind of gotten back into this thing. It was a 21-3 game. They cut that down to 24-17 with an eight-play, 70-yard touchdown drive, but Iowa responds to keep the Commodores at bay. Diego Pavia, the story so far, he is starting to heat up a little bit here. 21-31, 235 yards, and two touchdowns with no interceptions. Also has run for 31 yards, and Vandy moving the ball yet again. On a short down and distance, they are going to convert the change and have a fresh set coming up here with about 10 minutes left to go in the fourth, right at about midfield. And in the NBA, we've been monitoring this. This is the sweat that I've got right now. We have a 96-96 tie, and in fact, I think that is now 98-96. Charlotte up on top. 40 points in the paint for the Hornets today as they are taking on the Golden State Warriors with just under a minute left to go in the third quarter. Hornets here closed as 7.5-point underdogs in this spot. Zach Cohen also on 7.5. You can check out the article up at VSiN.com. And excuse me, some spots closed 8 in favor of the Golden State Warriors. Total of 234. We are cruising toward getting that over right now between these two. Not much defense being played. And a rough spot, you would think, for Golden State. Not only the third game in 4 days for Golden State, but also playing an early tip on the East Coast for the Golden State Warriors. Total up to 259.5. Between these two teams with 22 seconds left to go in the third. As we talked about with Tim, and we'll have more on this matchup coming up a little bit later as well as we revisit what's going to happen later today between Miami and Ohio State. And as we speak, some 41s are starting to appear, including where I sit right now. But 41 now at Circa, you do wonder what this is going to close at. We don't have a lot of time, 4:30 p.m. Pacific time, before we get to the close for Ohio State and Miami. But do you wonder if those 10s start to appear once more or if maybe going to head in the other direction? Not really grabbing a key number sitting at 9.5, but if you wanted to lay it, that's pretty key when you're talking about floating around that 10. It is somewhat telling, though. We talk about this all the time. You see it right now. in the Georgia and Ole Miss game, where there has been a refusal to get to that full seven. And in fact, a couple of spots sitting at six, shaded to the favorite side. But there has not been a real rush to get this back up to that 10. Would make you think that there are some waiting in the wings to maybe grab that 10 should it appear. And the total now starting to become a story as well, as Circa is back up to 41. And we'll see if maybe you start to get some buyback as we get closer to kickoff between these two teams at this point right now. We'll also have some previews coming up in the next hour as well, because we have in about 15 minutes from now, a little less, we will have kickoff between Michigan and Texas. Give you the breakdown here, but the current numbers between these two in the Citrus Bowl, Texas down to a 5-point favorite with a total of 50.5. We'll give you our preview there. The NBA slate, as we have about two games set to tip off in 15 minutes. And Zach Cohen joins us at 30, so don't go anywhere.